Our scripture reading today is from Exodus chapter 20, verses 8 to 11. Remember the seventh day and treat it as holy. 6 days you may work and do all your tasks, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. Do not do any work on it, not you, your sons or daughters, your male and female servants, your animals, or the immigrant who is living with you. Because the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea, and everything that is in them in 6 days, but rested on the seventh day. That is why the Lord blessed the seventh day and made it holy.
Yesterday, I got in my car and left. Just drove away. I drove away from my home where Mason, our dog Rags, and our cat Bela and I live. Thank you for all the concern and the messages and the prayers and everything for our dog Ragamuffin. It's true what I told Marcia. I think Ragamuffin could be sick and our street shuts down. I could be sick and who knows? But I left. I drove roads I'd never been on before. Truth is, I drove through some counties that I couldn't even tell you. I don't even know where I ended up in some of those. But the tank was full, so I just kept driving. There were no words, no music, no sounds, but the tires on the road and the wind against the glass. And although I had to pay attention, of course, to the signs, the signals, my own place on the road, and other drivers, I intentionally set out on a mindless moment of rest. There were times that busy thoughts tried to demand my attention, but I allowed myself to try to ignore them. I know that for some of us, rest has to be forced sometimes, and sometimes we have to make ourselves not think or work or not be doing something. Marcia. But even when we do plan to free our minds with meditation and silence, if you're like me, you find yourself cheating when thoughts invade the moment, and then one leads to another that leads to another that leads to another, and then your moment of rest has become a moment of action, even if it's only in your head. And I know that there are several folks here who come to church each Sunday because you need a moment of respite from your busy world. For some, this is all you'll get till you come back next Sunday. But even so, while you're here, you're struggling to not think about what's next. What else is on the task list? What has to be done? And how you want to fill it all in? Growing up in a very expressively literal church, myself, we blamed everything on the devil. Or at least a spirit or a demon. We didn't acknowledge illness or disease. We called it a spirit of infirmity. When somebody was struggling financially, we called it a spirit of poverty. When someone was battling addiction or depression, we'd lay hands on them and we'd start casting out demons of depression and the stronghold spirit of addiction. I don't know how many times on a Sunday morning I'd hear the preacher say, "Hey, don't let the devil steal your blessing this morning by distracting you from what God is trying to say to you today." Just between you and me, I think the devil probably should have had an endorsement deal with a Cracker Barrel because that's where my mind went. Most Sunday mornings during that sermon. But what I'm talking about this morning are those thoughts that become worries. The kind that prevent you from finding a place or a moment of rest. The kind that will creep in even while we're talking about it right now. I think everybody here knows that I'm a singer. I used to do it professionally. I used to sing to pay my bills and feed my family. I grew up loving music. There was always a lot of music in our home. My family, both immediate and extended, we sang all the time, at home, in the car, at family reunions, at church. Music always just brought us a lot of joy. And that's why I felt so fortunate and blessed when we found ourselves with the opportunity to make it our livelihood, our job. Who wouldn't want to turn a happy hobby into a career? But doing a thing for fun, for the fun of it, is a whole lot different than doing it because you have to. It's sort of like the difference between living in paradise and working in it and vacationing in it. Although you may not be doing it, somebody's making that bed and cooking those meals and guarding the beach. And vacationing and vocationing are not the same thing. Vacationing is sleeping in and seeing the sights. Vocationing is setting the alarm and fighting the traffic. It's the same thing, and it's the same when the things that bring you happiness suddenly bring demands. The difference in singing for fun and singing for food is you have to sing whether you feel like it or not. The difference in singing for the joy of it and making music for paying customers is that sloppy phrases and unclean cutoffs are no longer acceptable. Being slightly off pitch is no longer acceptable. And dragging or rushing the tempo of the song is not permissible, even if you are moved by the Spirit. And in the recording studio, a good producer is listening for every little detail and is always having to make judgment calls on when to allow artistic expression, especially those emotional and spiritual moments of expression, whether or not they will make it to the final piece. And then something that we often forget, sometimes it's not the sound that's most important. It's the silence. It's the rest. Some of you may be familiar with John Ruskin. He was a thinker, a writer, an art critic way back during the Victorian era. He wrestled with his faith and his religion like many of us do, certainly like I do. But he often found God in places that most people don't think to look, or probably just too busy to look. One of my favorite thoughts by John Ruskin is about music. But not just about musical notes, but about the rest. He says, "There is no music in a rest, but there is the making of music in it. And our whole life melody, the music is broken off here and there by rests. And we foolishly think that we've come to the end of the tune. But God sends a time of forced leisure, sickness, disappointed plans, frustrated efforts, and makes a sudden pause in the choral hymn of our lives. And we lament that our voices must be silent, and our part missing in the music, whichever goes up to the ear of the Creator." How does the musician read the rest? See him beat the time with unwavering, unvarying count and catch up the next note true and steady as if no breaking place had come between. Not without design does God write the music of our lives, but be it ours to learn the tune and not be dismayed at the rests. They're not to be slurred over, nor to be omitted, nor to destroy the melody, nor to change the keynote. If we look up, God will beat the time for us. With the eye on God, we shall strike the next note full and clear. Wow. Now I grapple a little bit with Ruskin's theology of being God's victim, but the truth is, so did he. But the point here is the rest. Brenda, while I was working on this sermon, I looked hard for a song, a piece of music, a score that contains no rests. They're hard to find, and everyone I did find was some Irish melody somewhere that was intended to be played on a violin or something of that sort where no breath is involved. It It's the only way you can do it. The rests are that important. In a song, it's as important as the note. Without it, the timing is off. The song is out of rhythm. The singer has no place to breathe. The musician has no place to pause. The rest allows us to prepare for the next note, the next phrase, the next line. It bridges this part of the song with all of the parts that follow. The rest is the Sabbath, however brief it is. And that, of course, depends on the tempo, the time signature, the score. But as surely as the musical note is the work, the rest is the Sabbath. And you can't have a proper song without the rest. You can't have your best life without the rest. And I'm going to be honest with you. I cried when I wrote that. It's why I stopped writing, closed the computer, grabbed the keys, got in the car, and left for rest. You can't be as healthy as you could, as patient as you should, and as mindful as you would, as compassionate as you could without the rest. I talked with a friend not long ago who told me that he's afraid to rest. He's afraid to pause. He's hesitant to stop doing because doing allows him to avoid some of the hard thoughts that often find their way to the surface when he's not forced to think about something else. And he was right. Doing and not resting allows us to distract ourselves from the things that press us. But avoiding rest, because it allows us to ignore those important things, can sometimes lead to crisis or emergencies that could have been avoided if rest had only brought them to our attention. It's just another reason to rest, to pause. The pause is vital. It's important. In today's scripture, from the First Testament book of Exodus, we jump right into the middle of the Ten Commandments. I'm sure everyone here is familiar with these, where they came from, who wrote them. But of course, as everything else in the world of Christian theology, there's some disagreement on exactly who said them, who wrote them down, and there's even some disagreement on the number of commandments. And depending on if you prefer the Exodus list that we've pulled from today or the account from Deuteronomy, you can come to any number of different conclusions. And Lord knows that we Christians are good at picking a side, staking a flag in it, making a denomination out of it, and fighting like hell with it. But after escaping from Egypt, Moses and the children of Israel had been camped out at Mount Horeb for only a few days when God spoke to Moses to meet on the mountain to receive these laws. Now again, there's some disagreement on whether God spoke these directly to the people or if Moses delivered them. But what most scholars do agree on is that God wrote them down. You shall have no other gods. You shall not make any graven images. You shall not take God's name in vain. Honor your parents. You shall not kill. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not bear false witness. You shall not covet. And then right there in the middle of all of that is remember the Sabbath. Remember to rest. To me, it's telling that God's command to rest is just as important as God's command to not kill, steal, or lie. And if you rank them in the order that God spoke them, which we really like to do, it's even more important than stealing, killing, and lying. There's more about the Sabbath. There's more about rest than we'll be able to chat about today. How it's intended to not only be a time of rest for us humans, but also for nature. So maybe we'll have a chance, Pastor, at some point to have that conversation somewhere down the road. It's important. So hopefully we will. But we all know that we can all get pretty dogmatic about some things. And like I mentioned just a minute ago, we Christians, especially the more evangelical version of us, are good at picking a thing and building a sin around it. Some of our brothers and the sisters in the more dogmatic faith, honestly more brothers than sisters, will look for any good reason to send otherwise good people to hell. Jesus had to deal with groups like that himself. They made keeping the Sabbath a law that you could be punished for not observing. And like any good piece of legislation, over the years, by the time Jesus came on the scene, the laws regarding keeping the Sabbath were completely out of control. There were literally hundreds of things that the law said you could not do on the Sabbath. Field work was not permitted, to the point that spitting on the ground was against the law because it disturbed the soil. Wearing certain shoes was against the law because they could be too heavy and cause an unnecessary burden. Walking through grass was not allowed because it could bend the grass, which would be considered threshing, which was against the law to do on the Sabbath. If your house caught on fire, you couldn't even carry out your clothes. Now, you could put on as many layers as possible and wear them out of the house, which to me sort of contradicts the whole heavy shoes thing. But this was the backdrop that Jesus was facing. And one of my favorite stories in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, there are varying descriptions of the Sabbath day that Jesus and his disciples were walking through a field. They grabbed some grain and they ate it. The ever-watchful Pharisees pounced on them like really good fundamentalists, and they made the charge of blasphemy against them. Now, I like to imagine what it all looked like. These pious men spelling all out to Jesus, of all people. He stands there listening to their charge, and when they finish, he explains to them that the idea of the Sabbath was never about creating a burden. It was about making room for rest. Just like so many other things the religious elite do, they formed it into a weapon or a thing to wield power over people and populations. The Pharisees took something that God had always intended to be good and for our benefit and turned it into something to be dreaded and feared instead. Jesus was having none of it. I love it when Jesus said to them, "You people have missed it altogether. You think it's your job to protect this thing that God instituted. You think you were made for this day, that you were made for the Sabbath, but that's not the case. As a matter of fact, it's completely opposite. The Sabbath was made for you. God's Sabbath law is for your benefit, for your health, for your happiness, for your well-being, but you've made it into a chore." Of course, most of you probably know that it happened again when Jesus, the religious rebel, apparently just couldn't help himself. It was on another Sabbath that he broke the law when he healed a man. And not unlike some legalists like to view things today, abiding by the law in that day, especially to these people, was often more important than showing compassion. But Jesus, and this is why he'll always be my example, Jesus recognized that the burdensome law that these religious leaders created was not only causing harm to everyone, especially the most vulnerable, but it was replacing the very spirit and heart of the God who simply wanted creation to rest. To God and to Jesus, the Sabbath has always and only been about rest. And I have to say, especially since I've probably pretty much already jumped the shark this morning, I think it's beautiful and lovely that God mentions the immigrant in this passage. "But on the seventh day is the Sabbath to the Lord your God. Do not do any work on it, not you, your sons or daughters, your male or female servants, your animals, or the immigrant who's living with you. Because the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and everything that's in them in 6 days, but rested on the seventh day. That's why the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy." I know it's hard to rest. I also know how important it is. And so did Jesus. And so does God. That's why the Lord blessed rest. and made it holy. So even in our busyness and running hard, keep it all together, multiple jobs and classes and obligations and volunteering and chores and tasks, and even in our intentional time with God, we're encouraged to find a place to let peace settle in and rest in it. Because according to what we know now, doing that is doing a holy thing. May we rest